Morning.
Good morning. I'm going to wait for these people to come in, although it looks like they went back out. Maybe I won't wait. Just one glance was enough. Media enlightenment. And so this morning I'm going to talk about the first part of the mountains and the Sutra of Mountains and Waters by Dogen, written by Dogen in the 13th century. The Mountains and Waters Sutra. So, first of all, for those of you who don't know, sutra. So a sutra is a sacred saying from our Buddhist teachers. And the root word is the same as suture, right? Suture, sutra, suture. So we're using these words to suture together something that's been split, something that's suffering, some pain we have, some unnatural feeling of separation, which is not easy, which is hard for us. So we're suturing it together. And in this case, we're suturing it together with mountains and waters. So, I've done for years since learning, maybe 25 years ago, a mountain meditation. I've been doing that, and a water meditation. I've been doing that. Although the water meditation I don't do here in the Zendo because it's a lying down meditation. But the mountain meditation, it goes briefly like this, and some of you have done it with me. thoughts come through the mountain. the mountain just sits. The sun shines down on the mountain. The mountain just sits. A rainstorm comes up. The mountain just sits. People start hiking around the mountain, making a lot of noise. The mountain just sits. Cars try to build roads up to the mountain, up to the top of the mountain. The mountain just sits. And then the other guided meditation, which I've never led here, but when I used to teach mindfulness-based stress reduction, I led because we lay down, was the water meditation. Just let your lie down in a comfortable position, or maybe I better not do this too much. I'll just kind of go to sleep, which is fine. Lie down in a comfortable position and just let your breath flow in and out. Let your thoughts flow in and out. Notice the contours of your bed. Just notice where your skin is touching the bed, and just let it flow. Let it move. Everything inside you and outside of you is moving. That's all. The water meditation. So I'm going to talk about six paragraphs from Dogen's Mountains and Waters Sutra, from the early part. First part. These mountains and waters of the present are expressions of the ancient Buddhas. All phenomena realize completeness. Because they exist before the eon of emptiness, they are living in the present. Because they are the self before the appearance of any sign, they are liberated. So the mountains and the waters are expressing the teachings of the Buddhas, of the sages. It's not a book about the mountains and the waters. It's the waters. It's the lake. It's the lake. It's the hill. And we know this. I mean, we feel very happy to be by Lake Calhoun because we know when we're close to mountains, when we're close to nature, when we're close to streams, we calm down. we feel connected. There's a suturing that takes place, a healing of this woundedness, of this feeling of disconnectedness from each other in the world, by being by water, by being by mountains. So they are the sutra. They are the sutra. They are the suturing. These mountains and waters of the present are expressions of the ancient Buddhas. All phenomena realize completeness. Audible, inaudible, tangible, intangible, conscious, unconscious. They're all continually expressing the truth of being joined with all life, being complete, just as we are, just as it is. Rocks on the meditation path. We have a beautiful meditation path outside, which we walk on in the mornings and during retreats, and I hope we'll start walking on it in the evenings too. Beautiful, beautiful. One rock on that path. Just look at one rock on that path. Just look at it. All life is there. Everything's there. Everything. A little summer breeze throwing in the zendo this morning. Flowing back and forth, just flowing, just giving us some suturing, letting go of our worries and just experiencing that flowing of the breeze, just blowing our worries away. They come back, sure, but there's more breeze. There's always more breeze. Till our mind gets cleared somewhat of all its toing and froing, all its upping and downing, inning and outing, and we're sutured. And then the stitches fall away too, because we're sutured. We return to our original wholeness, to our original completeness, just as we are, just as we are. All phenomena realize completeness. Because they exist before the eon of emptiness, they are living in the present. Mountains exist before the appearance of any thought that divides us from them. They're present right now in this flat part of Minneapolis, right here. Because they are the self before the appearance of any sign, they are free and unhindered in their activities. Because they are the self before the appearance of any sign, they are free and unhindered in their activities. Before the appearance of any concept, we have that freedom. The concepts can be helpful too, but before they appear, we have that freedom. The self of the mountain, the self of the rocks on the path, can only appear because of us. We can only appear because there's earth, because there's water, because there's rocks, because there are mountains. Pretty cool, huh? Pretty cool. Pretty lucky. Aren't we lucky beings? Aren't we lucky? The next paragraph, second paragraph. Because mountains are big and broad, the way of riding the clouds is always reached from the mountains. The power of soaring in the wind comes freely from the mountains. Many of you have climbed mountains. Most of you have climbed some mountains. Climbing mountains, climbing mountains. So, climbing mountains and mountains that I have climbed when I was younger and looking up to the top of the mountain when I was at the bottom and thinking, that's impossible. I'll never get there. It's just in the sky. I'm going to go up there. Impossibly high. Impossibly high. But yet, if I just take one step and then another step, if I just take one breath and another breath, voila! In my first step, I'm already at the top. Do you know that? Do you know that? You know that, don't you? Kind of. First step. You're at the top. You're at the top. inhaling the universe with each breath. Inhaling the universe with each breath. So we can ride the clouds. We can follow the wind beyond our comfort zone. Scary to ride the clouds. Scary to follow the wind. But we move beyond our comfort zone. Beyond the limitations of our small, chattering, worrying guy or girl in here. Or guy-girl in here. Or whatever. Right? So that we can reach out and embrace life. And so all of its confusion and all of its contradictions and all of its upping and downing and downing and toing and froing and inning and outing, just be with it. Just be with it. Like a mountain. Like the water. Third paragraph. Priest Daokai of Mount Furong said to the assembly, "The green mountains are always walking. A stone woman gives birth to a child at night." Dogen continues, "Mountains walking is just like human walking. Accordingly, do not doubt mountains walking, even though it does not look the same as human walking. The Buddha's ancestors' words point to walking. This is fundamental understanding." So it sure doesn't seem like mountains walk, but they do. Everything's walking. Everything's moving. Why not mountains? Why not mountains? So for the last 13 years, I go to the same island in the Caribbean every winter, and there's a mountain. One mountain. It's not a mountain by Rocky Mountain standards or Sierra Mountain standards. It's barely a hill. But it doesn't know. It doesn't care. I don't know. I don't care. Because there's nothing to compare to, right? So I look out my back door in the morning. And if I look with my old, tired mind, it's just the mountain. But if I look with my fresh mind, which is no mind at all, it's never the same. It's never the same. You know this. You know this in your heart. Never. Sometimes fog passing through. Sometimes the green is lustrous. Sometimes it's fading. Sometimes the differences are very subtle. But if we just look, it's always moving. It's always changing. So with your life, what part's rigid? What part's stuck? What part seems immovable? Is your career stuck? Is your romantic life stuck? Rigid, unyielding? Something in your family life stuck? Rigid or unyielding? Or maybe you're just stuck in depression. Depression. People never used to talk about being stuck in depression because it was not socially acceptable. So someone said to me, "Oh, Zen students are more depressed than they used to be." I thought, no. They're just not hiding it anymore. They're just being open and truthful now. What about your depression? Maybe you can barely make it to the Zen Center this morning, although this morning it was bright. But maybe you could barely make it out of bed, even when it's bright sometimes. Maybe so. But whether it's your romantic life or your family life or your career or your depression, it's all walking. It's all walking. It's all moving. If we look closely enough with our kind Zazen mind, it's in motion. It's fluid. It's dancing. Whatever it is, whatever it is. Priest Daokai of Mount Furong said to the assembly, "The green mountains are always walking. A stone woman gives birth to a child at night." The stone woman gives birth to a child by night. Stone seems dense, colorless, even dead, yet it bubbles with possibility. That one rock out there bubbles with possibility. So when I was a younger man, I practiced shamanism. And my teacher, Michael Harner, one of my two teachers, had me spend a lot of time out in nature. And what did he have me do? Well, one time he had me look at rocks. Spend the whole time just looking at rocks. And then he said, and then find a rock that you have affinity with. Find a rock that you have affinity with. And just be with that rock. And I said, well, what if the mosquitoes bite? He said, well, if the mosquitoes will bite, but you just be with that rock. You just be with that rock. So, and then he said, and then take the rock home and be with it. Have it be your altar. Have it be your meditation. But remember where you brought it, where you've gotten it from, so you can return it. So you can return it to exactly where you've gotten it from. So within rocks, we see wonderful life. We see wonderful. We can have wonderful experiences of and do learning, but it's not just head learning. It's learning of connectedness. How we can be more connected. How we can be more vital. How we can take care of our environment, our world, and the people in those in our world whom we treat just like rocks. We treat them because we think they're not alive. But they're alive. Rocks are alive. Who's of more value? A rock? An African-American adolescent? Who's been deprived of everything? Or Tim? It's all dancing together. It's all moving together. Can we love it and embrace it? Can we do that? I think so. I think with Dogen and other people's encouragement, we can do that. We can suture together what we have rent. I don't know if we've rented or somebody else has rented, but it has been rent asunder. And we're healing it. We're healing it. Right within your depression, your stone-like inertia, you can bear a beautiful child. You can give birth to a beautiful child. Because it's life. It's life. Next one. In the Green Mountains is the blossoming of the whole world. People outside the mountains do not realize or understand the mountains walking. If you doubt mountains walking, you do not know or understand your own walking. If you know your own walking, you know the mountains walking. Green mountains, filled with life. Each blade of grass in the backyard, each tree in the backyard, an ecosystem. Birds flying, fish in the lake, flowers blossoming, growing, withering, dying, animals born, living their lives, dying, passing away, forever. Pretty cool, pretty lucky beings we are, and rocks are, and everybody is. Pretty lucky beings. A gnat, a universe, a mosquito, a mountain, walking, arising, existing, passing away, right? Passing away. We breathe in molecules of air that have been breathed out by countless beings, even rock beings. All atoms in our bodies were once part of beings long gone, and future beings will use them after we die. This body-mind, born and called Morris Timothy, and then called Tim, and no longer Morris Timothy, and then called Tiny Tim, which this body-mind hated, and no longer Tim, just Tiny Tim, And then I won't go into the whole sordid part of it, but Tiny Tim, and then Daddy, and then Zentetsu, and then Grandpa, just walking, just moving, just living, just dying, right? Simple, simple, you guys, very, very simple. Base, our mind, our heart mind is very simple, very simple. Next paragraph. Study the Green Mountains using numerous worlds as your standards. So he's saying you use numerous worlds as your standards rather than just your own concepts, because the Green Mountains mean something differently to the snail than they do to us. So if you want to study them, don't just be attached to your standards. Open up to the standards of the snail. And your own standards. Don't dish your own standards so that you can really know the mountain. Study the Green Mountains using numerous worlds as your standards. Clearly examine the Green Mountains walking and your own walking. Also examine walking backward and walking and backward walking. And investigate that walking forward and backward never stopped since before form arose. The time of the empty eon. Examine walking backward and backward walking. Examine walking backward and backward walking. So in another teaching of Dogen in the Fukanza Zengi, or Instructions for Zazen, he says, take the backward step that turns the light and shines it inward. Whatever you're concerned about, trace it to the root. Trace it to the root where there's no inside and no outside. Consciousness says, I'm over here, you're out there. But if we trace this sense to the root, if we trace this concern to the root, we come closer and closer, and at some point we're no longer separating ourselves. So at some point, we're really suturing. Until we realize our original wholeness. We realize it. That doesn't mean our craving goes away for our lifetime. I've been sitting for 130 years, and I still have as much craving as you do. Probably. We could have a contest, I suppose. Still lots of craving. So if we have crave, what do? Well, we have three general techniques that we didn't learn from Buddhism that work to a degree, and we should honor them. We suppress. Sometimes we need to suppress our craving, right? We indulge. Sometimes we just need to indulge our craving. It's no big deal. Don't worry about it. Sometimes we need to bargain with our craving, right? So I'm supposed to be on a very rigid diet. Because I had and have Lyme's disease, so very rigid. Well, at least to me it seems rigid, although my friend said, oh, that's not rigid. But I guess it's all relative, right? What's rigid? What's not rigid? So I'm not supposed to have any sweets except fruit. I can't have fruit juice, but I can have fruit. I can have all the fruit I want, so I stuff myself with fruit. But sometimes I still get a craving for a real sweet. So a couple of nights ago, two or three nights ago, I got a craving for a real sweet. Enough of these grapes. God, I got so many grapes in me, I'm in a grape. I want something real. I miss chocolate. I won't tell you all the things I miss. I miss a lot of things. So I started bargaining with myself. I didn't mention it to Linda because I didn't want to get her involved. Then you have another bargainer, and she doesn't even want to bargain. She just wants me to follow my diet. But this is about Sometimes you need to bargain, you know. Life is about bargaining. So I think, oh, well, I can have maple syrup. I'm allowed to have maple syrup. I wouldn't want to eat maple syrup flying, and we don't have any at home anyway. So it's probably 5 o'clock or something, and I think, oh, I know what I'll do. My doctor said that just as important as my diet is exercise. So, I only live 3 blocks from here, so I'll walk all the way to the Wedge. I'll walk over to Lake of the Isles, down Lake of the Isles, over to the Wedge, and I'll walk home. And then when I'm at the Wedge, I'll see what I can get that's not too bad. So I walked all the way to the Wedge. I looked around. Nothing with maple syrup. Nothing there. Oh, muffin. They have one kind of muffin with maple syrup. It's gone. But I'm in a bargaining state. You know, I've walked all that way. Right? I'm in a bargaining frame of mind. So I find a little oat bar that's got rice sugar. It doesn't say rice something. Rice sugar in it. And then a little tiny bit, because it's the end of... Is it Sevia? S-E-V-I-A? Sevia. Stevia? Stevia. My doctor didn't say I could have stevia. But everybody else says stevia is fine. So I ate the oat bar. And I was fine. I didn't get sick. But of course I didn't tell my wife I'd done it, because then if I got sick, she'd be pissed instead of comforting. Duh. So those are what we—that's what we do. And to know that we do that, and to just do it, sort of with awareness, without getting too tangled up in it, it's fine. It's fine. But these Buddhist teachers also teach about a deeper way, to approach our whatever it is we're craving. First, the two ways that are taught by Dogen in particular are, first, find an activity we can engage in wholeheartedly, and the craving will vanish. Of course, when you're done doing the activity wholeheartedly, the craving comes back, and you do another activity wholeheartedly. And actually, if you do that, you can notice this, particularly in retreats and sessions. It really works. Really works. You can notice this in your daily life, but it's harder in your daily life. It really works. You give yourself wholeheartedly to something that you feel an affinity to, and the craving goes away. It goes away. And then secondly, since we are Zazen meditators, in meditation, in our sitting, we release the object of our craving by turning our mind back to feel the craving itself. I release the image of the chocolate, the craving for chocolate, by just turning my gentle consciousness, gentle mind, back to feeling the craving. And then when I'm really close to that craving, when I'm really close to it without judging it, just sitting it, breathing into it, then I can feel it's walking. Then I can feel it's moving. Then I can feel it's the dance of life. That's all it is. That's all anything is. You can do that. You can do that. If I can do that, you can do that. For sure. For sure. You can be so close to it that it dissolves into just this. Whatever this is. You don't need to define it. Whatever it is. I have allergies also. My nose is always itching, especially this time of year. That's why I'm going like this. Always itching. So I have a craving when I'm sitting to scratch my nose. And especially in the backyard during walking meditation, I really have a craving to scratch my nose. But if I get closer to the craving, I get closer to it, if I breathe into it, it's not personal anymore. It's not mine anymore. It just falls away. Yeah, it comes back. Everything comes back. Everything is coming back and falling away. So get close to your sadness. It doesn't matter if your sadness is is excruciating or just on the surface, get close to it when you experience it. Get close to it. Be with it. Just be with it. Just rock it. Rock it as your baby. It's your baby. It's who you are. It's not just sadness. Be close to it. It's molecular. It belongs to everyone. You will experience that if you get really close to it with your kind mind, with your not judging mind. You will experience that. So Dogen has a poem. If you follow the river all the way back to its source, there are clouds. If you follow the clouds all the way back to their source, there is the river. The place where the observer and the observed meet. Openness. We can say nothingness or nothingness, but openness. Openness. All-embracingness. Again, clearly examine the Green Mountains walking and your own walking. Also examine walking backward and backward walking. And investigate that walking forward and backward never stopped since before form arose. The time of the empty eon. He always puts something in there to really throw us off. Just we've got to figure it out. And he mentions the empty eon. The empty eon. Everything that I'm saying about mountains is also about you. Everything that you're saying about me is also about mountains. We're moving together. We're moving together. We don't exist without each other. We don't exist without gnats and stones in the path. We can look into this with our kind zazen mind. Our kind zazen. Outside of zazen, it's hard because our minds are so turbulent. That's why we sit. That's why we sit. Radical immediacy. Fully entering into whatever at this moment. Sometimes, if our zazen is not working very well, sitting with a phrase. A phrase that helps us suture. A phrase from the sutra or from our own sutra. Our own life that helps us sew together that which we have rent asunder. Maybe it's a koan. Maybe it's a gata. Maybe it's a mantra. Maybe it's just something I heard. A song. I've talked about different parts of Bob Dylan that I use as my mantras for years. Oh, great. Cool. The one great sacred mantra. Everybody wants the one great sacred mantra. That can be the one great sacred mantra. It doesn't matter. Everybody wants the hierarchy. We want to get the real mantra. Go to the Himalayas, hike to the top, and meet Guru Baba Daba and Maba. And then you'll get he'll give you the one true sacred mantra. Well, okay, do it. That's fine. But one breath, one step. One breath, one step. So, when my teacher gave me a gate gate as a mantra to use years ago, first I thought about it. What's this? This is aren't supposed to be mantras. This is silly. I pondered it. I tried to think, well, what should I do with it? I asked him what I should do with it. He didn't say much of anything. He never seemed to understand my English. Never. Never. You know, we always make an excuse, right? Then, after a while, I began just to do it. Just to do it. Just to make it with my breath, with my steps, little by little, bring it back, gently, till what happens? You actually melt. You melt into it. It melts into you. Your suffering is sutured. You're suturing your suffering. And even the stitches fall away. Fall away. So all that he's saying here about mountains, about walking and flowing, means no separation, no ending, no beginning, always available to us if we fully enter it. If we fully enter it. No final enlightenment. Just this backward and forward walking, beginningless, endless, always available to us, happening simultaneously with everyone, with everything. Walking backward does not obstruct walking forward. This is called the mountain flow and the flowing mountain. This is called the mountain's flow and the flowing mountain. Springing forth, springing forth, endlessly giving ourselves away to just this, moment after moment, forever. Not just lying there, vegging out. Vegging out is good sometimes too. Not criticizing yourself for vegging out. Sometimes just vegging out, just lying there. But not forever, because there's stuff to do. There are people to be with. There are people to help. There are people to love. There are rocks to take care of. There are rocks to learn from. Just lying there like a dead stone, because you're alive. You're alive. Actively engaging. Whether you're flowing, whether you're walking, whether you're traveling on water, whether you're traveling on air, or whether you're just sitting. Just sitting. Just sitting. Final phrase from Dogen for today. The mountain always practices in every place. The mountain always practices in every place. Everything in the world is alive. Everything is expressing itself, exerting itself, just by being. We can let go of our resistance to being who we are and just join in this wonderful dance of life. We can do it. You can do it. I can do it. We're already doing it, so we might as well acknowledge it. We might as well not try to split off from it and create new wounds that we have to suture up. But we'll create some new wounds. We will. We will. And we can just be with them and suture them. Just be with them and suture them. No problem. No problem. So I want to finish with a poem from the great Zen master Lewis Carroll, whom some of you may have heard of, some of you may have not have heard of, but he's in my lineage. I don't know if he's in yours. This is called The Lobster Quadrille. Will you walk a little faster, said a whiting to a snail? There's a porpoise close behind us, and he's treading on my tail. See how eagerly the lobsters and the turtles all advance. They are waiting on the shingle. Will you come and join the dance? Will you, won't you? Will you, won't you? Will you join the dance? Will you, won't you? Will you, won't you? Won't you join the dance? You can really have no notion how delightful it will be when they take us up and throw us with the lobsters out to sea. But the snail replied, too far, too far, and gave a look askance, said he thanked the whiting kindly, but he would not join the dance. Would not, could not, would not, could not, would not join the dance. Would not, could not, would not, could not, could not join the dance. What matters how far we go, his scaly friend replied. There is another shore, you know, upon the other side. The further off from England, the nearer is to France. Then turn not pale, beloved snail, but come and join the dance. Will you? Won't you? Will you? Won't you? Will you join the dance? Will you? Won't you? Will you? Won't you? Won't you join the dance? A little bit of time for questions or comments or poems or ditties or whatever. Larry.
I really like what you said about what you were saying about mountains and water. Years ago, when I was hiking by myself in Grand Canyon, I was down at the bottom, and I was sitting around, and it's kind of in the middle of the day, there, looking up the rock, beautiful rock formations there, and a fly ran around the outside. It brushed the fly away, and then, you know, it came back as possible. Fly mounts went and brushed it away again. It happened a few times, so then I thought, well, stupid fly, you know, it's kind of flying in the air, it's there, you know, here one minute, gone the next, you know. And I thought, wait a minute, you know, here I am, bottom of the Grand Canyon, and I'll probably be out of here, you know, in another couple of days. And I'll be up, you know, another place in the canyon, you know, hour or two or something. And I thought, you know, if I was one of these rock formations, like the red wall schist, you know, the pink granite, I would look at myself as I think, stupid person. So then I thought it was just kind of like rock consciousness. Rocks are looking at me. Mm-hmm. You know, and the time scale is totally different. Mm-hmm. The Grand Canyon, your mm-hmm. sense of time is altered anyway. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, you know, looking at things from the perspective of the rocks.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you, Larry. Thank you. Yeah, it's Diana.
I'm grateful for this morning and for the talk. And I'm in early recovery, and I think there's so much about detox in this center that provides support and encouragement. And, the things that I need here, and the one step up the mountain, one step at a time, because the mountain seems so high and so impossible.
Mm.
One step, and there's so many wonderful things.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, thank you. Thank you. Who else? Well, thank you.